It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Welcome into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Good morning on this Saturday morning. We've got another hour of sports lined up for you, talking all things happening in the state of Michigan. And there's plenty going on. We're going to touch in on our Detroit Tigers. Then we're going to get in and talk about Big Ten football, some recruiting, and other updates that have happened as the Big Ten seems to be ranking well and looking to have a great season for the upcoming football year. And then we'll touch on the UFL and the NBA and their playoffs as they're coming to a close before we get into the picks for the weekend. As always, I'll let you guys know how I'm feeling. I'm feeling great going into this weekend. Last weekend was my first travel tournament of the summer. We did all right. Won one game, lost one game, tied two. We only had three practices going in, so it's nice to get out there, get moving, and then we got back to work this weekend. We got another tournament next weekend. This weekend, I'm going to be out in Philadelphia taking in some professional lacrosse. Of course, eating me some cheesesteaks before I come back home to have my sister's gender reveals. I'm going to be an uncle soon. But you know what else has me excited? The Detroit Tigers are still playing amazing baseball. The Michigan Panthers are fighting for a UFL championship. And Michigan football looks like it might have a pretty solid season. And oh, by the way, my favorite lacrosse team is 2-0 currently at the start of the Pro League. So I believe we are in great shape for the coming weeks. Now let's talk about these Detroit Tigers and where they are standing. The most important news to talk about first is Jackson Jobe. Jackson Jobe does have a season-ending elbow injury, which is going to result in him getting Tommy John surgery. So we will not see Jackson Jobe on the mound again this year as he gets surgery to repair that elbow. Hopefully he will be back soon. Hopefully he'll be throwing better than he was before he left. But they're going to have to figure out how to replace Jackson Jobe in the starting pitching rotation as he will no longer be available because he will be getting that surgery. It sucks to see a rookie go through Tommy John surgery, but I mean, it's just about mandatory at this point. It's obviously really disappointing news, says general manager Jeff Greenberg. He really feels for Jackson. Obviously, everybody sees the talent, and he made a really positive impression on the team in a short time here. He's going to work through this as he is a very determined individual. I mean, started the season at 4-1 with a 4.22 ERA and just 10 starts, 39 strikeouts, 27 walks, and 49 total innings. The discomfort started while they were visiting the San Francisco Giants on May 28th. He's placed on the 15-day injury list with a grade 1 right flexor strain, which was then eventually updated as he will be going in for that surgery over the next coming weeks. But now that we know what's happening with Jackson Jobe, let's talk about the exciting things that are happening with the Detroit Tigers. They did bounce back after dropping or splitting that series with the White Sox 2-2. And they were able to take down the Chicago Cubs 2-1. They won the first game 3-1, lost the second game 6-1, and then were able to come through with a 4-0 victory to close out that series. They got another win 5-3 over the Orioles before losing 10-1. I am recording this on Thursday as I'll be heading out Friday morning for Philadelphia. So with that being said, the Orioles are looking to close out that series. The Tigers looking to close out that series. Good chance the Tigers win yet another game. It is tough because they're on the road where they aren't playing all that well. But before we push into what they have going on for the rest of this week and into the weekend, of course, we're going to do our standings update. We're going to look at the divisions first. We'll take the top three from each division. Starting in the AL East, the New York Yankees sitting up top at 41-25. The Toronto Blue Jays are 38-30, four games back. And six games back from the Yankees are the Tampa Bay Rays at 36-32. Over in the AL Central, you know who's sitting at the top. It's still those Detroit Tigers at 44-25. They are seven games ahead of the Minnesota Twins, who are 36-31, and they're eight games ahead of the Cleveland Guardians, who are 35-32. Wrapping up the AL in the West, the Houston Astros are 37-30 at the top, while the Mariners are four games back and tied with the Angels, who are also four games back at 33-34. Looking over at the NL in the East, the New York Mets sitting atop at 44-24. Five games back from them at 39-29 are the Philadelphia Phillies. And 13.5 games back from the New York Mets are the Washington Nationals at 30-37. The Cubs sit atop of the NL Central at 41-27. Five games behind them are the St. Louis Cardinals at 36-32, while the Milwaukee Brewers are 5.5 games back of the Cubs at 36-33, while the Los Angeles Dodgers are atop of the NL West at 41-28. The San Francisco Giants are a half game back at 40-28, and the Padres are just two games back from the Dodgers at 38-29. Taking a look at the leagues overall, the Detroit Tigers are atop of the AL at 44-25. New York Yankees coming in second, while the Blue Jays, the Astros, and the Twins will wrap up the top five. The Mets, Cubs, Dodgers, Giants, and Phillies are at the top of the National League. Looking at the overall standings, the Mets have claimed the top spot in the MLB for now. They're a half game above our Tigers, as they have played one less game and have one less loss. The Mets are plus 94 in the score differential, while the Tigers are plus 85. The Yankees, who are in third, are plus 106. The Cubs are plus 103 in fourth, and the Dodgers are plus 68 on the score differential in fifth place. The Tigers are 6-4 in their last 10, so they've done a great job of staying above 500 in their 10 most recent games. So as we look at their schedule and what they have coming up for this week, they're going to finish out the series against the Baltimore Orioles, who they did beat earlier this year, 3-0 in a sweep at home. So they're going to look to at least win both of those series as they close things out Thursday night. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're taking on the Cincinnati Reds at Comerica Park. Friday is a 7:10 first pitch. Montero will be on the mound against Martinez. Saturday, 1:10 p.m. later today, Flaherty will be taking on Singer. And then 12:05 p.m. tomorrow on Sunday, Gibson Long, who is replacing Jackson Jobe, will be taking on Miley. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Tigers are taking on Pittsburgh. The Pirates will be visiting Comerica Park as well. Tuesday and Wednesday are both 6:40 p.m. first pitch, as Casey Mize will take on Falter in the Tuesday matchup, while Skubal will take on Haney in the June 18th Wednesday matchup. And on the 19th at 1:10 p.m. for first pitch, Montero will take on Paul Skaines. As we know, Skaines is a beast, so that will be a matchup to keep our eyes on. And then that weekend series, which we'll touch more on next week, will be against the Tampa Bay Rays on the road. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So let's check in on those leaders for the Detroit Tigers when it comes to statistics. Riley Green still leading the team in batting average at a .279. He's got a .331 OBP, and his slugging percentage is .488. Spencer Torkelson still leading the team in home runs and runs batted in. Those RBI sitting at 47, while he has 16 home runs, doing all of this on a .237 batting average. The pitching, on the other hand, Tarik Skubal is back being the ace. There's a reason he won the AL Cy Young last year. There's a reason he will most likely be in the running for the AL Cy Young again this year. He's got a 2.16 ERA. He has 6 wins and 105 strikeouts. He's leading all 3 of those categories for the Detroit Tigers. I mean, with that being the case and how well the Tigers are playing, taking a look at the most recent power rankings, the Detroit Tigers are sitting at the top. They will remain there even after a 2-1 series win against the Cubs. So beating the Orioles will most likely keep them there. They were only interrupted by the Yankees at number 3, whereas the National League, who were running things outside of the Tigers. Zach McKinstry has been a crucial part of Detroit's improved offense, hitting 275, 362, and 436 while leading the team's position players with a 1.6 war. He has started games at 5 different positions. That's third base, right field, left field, shortstop, and second base. And he's hit well in high leverage situations. McKinstry entered 2025 with a career OPS plus of 77, including just 74 last season. They'll see if they can keep that up, as manager A.J. Hinch has been starting him nearly every game, including against left-handers. So the Tigers are going to be looking to remain at the top of the power rankings, but the Mets are knocking right on that door as they have had success and have found their way at the top of the MLB. We are going to check in on the Tigers again next week. When we come back from break, we are going to be getting into Big Ten football. The recruiting rankings are out for the entire NCAA. The Big Ten is all over them. And then we also have an update on the Sherrone Moore situation. We'll be back after the break with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. We're back with Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Time to talk a little college football. And the Big Ten is in the headlines. The last time they were in the headlines was discussion about the college football playoff. They were trying to obviously find a new metric system. The most recent one was SEC and Big Ten each get 4 teams in, possible play-in games for them, and then there's a shakedown for the other teams to get in as well for a 16-team playoff. That was not passed. There is still a lot of deliberation on that. There is still tons of talks on if we will see an expanded CFP anytime soon, but I cannot be positive with you that we will. I think it may take a few years before we see that. But then again, I'm not in those rooms having those conversations. I'm only seeing the same information that you guys are, which is the information that's posted online after those things happen. But from what I can see is a lot of other conferences are giving pushback against that. And it kind of just turns into basically the NFL at that point and makes it to where conference championships might not even exist in college football if they're going to go to that model with a bunch of teams getting in and having play-in games. There's no reason to have a conference championship game. And conference championship week is a huge part of college football, so I don't think anybody wants to see that portion of the game go away. So there's going to be a lot of deliberation there. The Big Ten obviously trying to do everything they can to get as many college football championships into the Big Ten as possible, and they're doing so by trying to have as many teams in the college football playoff as possible. It makes total sense to me, but I just think the way they're trying to go about it is not the best possible way. There's going to be, once again, tons of deliberation, and changes will come eventually, but I don't think they're going to come this season. I think it will remain the 12-5 or the 12-team playoff we see now with the 5 championship model, but they are going away from the top 4 get the bye. I think it's going to go to just the top 4 teams are going to get the bye regardless of conference champions or not, but the top 5 champions will still get in. I think it'll be interesting to see how it shakes down this year and if changes will come next year or the year after, but the Big Ten definitely made waves trying to get as many teams into the college football playoff as possible. They're making waves in other realms of the college football game as well, as the recruiting classes are filling up and just about over with as they get ready to get into summer ball and, of course, get ready for the season that kicks off in August. recruiting is a huge part of that. While the transfer portal is huge, you still have to bring in young, new talent that is going to learn under the older guys and also be impact players right away. We see it happen all over the country. I mean, Ryan Williams and Jeremiah Smith were great examples of freshmen last year that came in and made things happen right away. And then obviously, we're not going to go in and talk about freshmen and making things happen right away without bringing up Bryce Underwood, who's expected to do that for Michigan this year. He's expected to step in and be great right away. He's expected to step in and help get this team back to a national championship playing level. That's going to be a ton for a freshman, but I do believe Bryce Underwood has the physical stature, the football IQ, the skill, the strength, the speed, and everything else needed to get Michigan to where people are expecting them to be. It just may not necessarily be this year. It'll be an interesting thing to keep our eye on, but recruiting is always an important part to college football and every other college sport that is out there. So looking at the recruiting rankings, USC is sitting at the top as they have 14 ESPN 300 commits. The top offensive prospect is OT Kini Pepe, and their top defensive prospect is cornerback Albert Hill. Ohio State coming in at number two with 13 total ESPN 300 commits. Wide receiver Chris Henry Jr. is their top offensive prospect, while safety Blaine Bradford is their top defensive prospect. Penn State coming in at five. They have six ESPN 300 commits. Their top offensive prospect is wide receiver Davian Brown, while top defensive prospect is safety Matt Sieg. Coming in at number eight, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They have two ESPN 300 commits. Top offensive prospect is wide receiver Dizier Carter, and their top defensive prospect is an athlete, Chris Hewitt Jr. The Illinois Fighting Illini come in at nine. They have one ESPN 300 commit. Athlete Nasir Rankin is their top offensive prospect, while linebacker Cam Thomas is their top defensive prospect. Coming in at number 20 are the UCLA Bruins. They have two ESPN 300 commits. Offensive tackle Micah Smith is their top offensive prospect, while defensive end Anthony Jones is their top defensive prospect. And number 21, the Minnesota Golden Gophers have one ESPN 300 commit. Their offensive tackle Andrew Trout is their top offensive prospect, while cornerback Justin Hopkins is their top defensive prospect. The Michigan Wolverines are coming in at number 22. On this list, they have four ESPN 300 commits. The top offensive prospect, for some reason, is QB Brady Smiegel. Obviously, it's Bryce Underwood. Top defensive prospect, defensive end Mikael Blade. The Wolverines signed the number one quarterback for the 2025 cycle in Bryce Underwood, and he carries high expectations, but they continue to add talent to the position and landed ESPN 300 signal caller Brady Smiegel. The one-time Florida State commit is not only an accurate passer, but also plays with the confidence and swagger that will be needed battling with five-star Underwood. After losing two defensive linemen in the first round of the NFL draft, Michigan added several defensive linemen to this class, including ESPN 300 defensive end Mikael Blade. Four-star defensive end Tariq Boney is a player to keep an eye on. He lacks ideal length, but can be a well-rounded technician and a quick contributor. After scoring from off the beaten path with former standout tight end Colston Loveland, the Wolverines hope to strike big again from the same region with Matt Ludwig out of Montana. He is a versatile player with good ball skills who can be tough after the catch and fight for yards. The Oregon Ducks, they have four ESPN 300 commits. They're coming in at number 23. Tight end Kendre Harrison is their top offensive prospect, while defensive tackle Tony Cumberland is their top defensive prospect. The Washington Huskies have three ESPN 300 commits as their number 24 on this list. Offensive tackle Cody Green is their top offensive prospect, while defensive end Derek Coleman Brusa is their top defensive prospect. That is all of the Big Ten teams that made this list. But when we think about it, you got USC, Ohio State, Penn State, Rutgers, Illinois, And then that's when we get down into UCLA, Minnesota, Michigan, Oregon, and Washington. The Big Ten has 10 teams on this top ranking recruiting class list for college football this year. The Big Ten is going to be insane to play in this year simply because everyone is getting better. Everyone has these great recruiting classes. Everyone is bringing in talented transfers, and they're all fighting for one ground, the Big Ten championship, to secure their spot in the college football playoff for a chance to play for the national championship. Every game, week in and week out this year, is going to be an absolute battle. And the Michigan Wolverines may be in hot trouble as we pivot here. There has been news that they may even impose more on top of Sherrone Moore for what is happening in his role with Connor Stallions and what happened there. Obviously, Michigan and Sherrone Moore have already suspended him for his role, and they believe in the sign stealing and all of that debacle. They gave him two games. It is going to be games 3 and 4 this year, which are against Central Michigan University and Nebraska. So he will be coaching the first game of the year. And then the second game as well, which the second game is against Oklahoma, his alma mater. So, of course, he wants to be around for that game. But there is some news that they may be handing down and imposing even more penalties coming after Moore was given his initial suspension for deleting 52 text messages in a thread that he had with Connor Stallions. The NCAA has since obtained those messages. Moore later said he looked forward to being released. Still, he could face additional penalties from the infractions committee and is considered a repeat offender. He served a one-game suspension in 2023 for his role in the COVID-19 recruiting violations probe. Michigan also could be labeled a repeat offender and receive additional penalties, including recruiting restrictions or a postseason ban. Now, this is a little far stretched. No one thinks that a postseason ban is coming anytime soon. I mean, additional penalties could be scholarships taken away, or it could be a monetary penalty as well. There could be more suspensions coming down. We do not know the magnitude of how the NCAA will attack this. They've been gathering information on this situation for what, 20, 30, 40 years? No, just years. Sorry, 20, 30, 40 months now, a couple of years that they have been putting together all the information they need to come down and make a decision here. It is almost very likely that Sherrone Moore will get additional punishments from the NCAA. They hardly go down this long trail of, you know, investigating something and gathering all this information for years if they're not going to do anything. It's normally pretty quick that they don't find sufficient evidence, and then they say, okay, this is nothing, let's move on. But when they take their time and they're really combing through things and getting to the bottom of it, most likely there's going to be some kind of infractions coming just to, you know, prove to everyone that you can't get away with what you want to get away with when it comes to the NCAA. They are here to govern you, and they will govern you. So, you know, over the next couple of weeks, we'll find out exactly what's going to happen with Sherrone Moore and if he will be suspended or any other penalties will come down on the coaching staff and the university as a whole. But when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking UFL football as the Michigan Panthers are fighting for their first UFL championship. And we'll touch in on the NBA playoffs as well. After the break, we'll be back with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It is time for us to talk about the UFL before diving into the NBA playoffs for just a few moments. Wow. Michigan sports is at a whole nother level. To be honest, It is unreal the amount of success that Michigan sports have had recently. The Pistons having success in getting back into the playoffs. The Michigan Wolverines winning multiple national championships in several sports over the last few years. You have the Red Wings making their playoff push of recent. The Tigers are at the top of the MLB in the last couple of weeks. The Detroit Lions almost were in the Super Bowl. So let's just bump it up a notch and let's throw the Michigan Panthers of the former USFL fighting for their first UFL championship this weekend. The UFL took the XFL and the USFL and put them together into one. The Michigan Panthers were able to hang on and be one of those clinging teams from the USFL that continued on to the UFL. And now they are looking to be the first team that is not the Birmingham Stallions to win a UFL championship. The Panthers beat the Stallions, who are defending champs. Why can't the Panthers get it done? They're 6-4 in the regular season year, just like their opponent, the DC Defenders. When we look at the standings, I believe the Panthers were slightly better at scoring the ball this year. The Panthers scored 245 points, while the Defenders scored only 225. The Panthers gave up 198, while the Defenders gave up 224. Both of them are on one-game win streaks after bouncing back and beating the St. Louis Battlehawks and the Birmingham Stallions in their conference championship games to make it to the UFL championship. So now they're both on one-game win streaks. They're both feeling good. They both have momentum rolling into this game. So what is going to be the difference? I think the difference comes down to defense. As we have always said, defense wins championships. The DC Defenders' defense has been unreal, standing up to that name of Defenders and doing everything they can to defend and keep the opposing offense out of the end zone, which has helped the DC make it to the UFL championship. But at the end of the day, the Michigan Panthers have been phenomenal on defense. When they have had struggles this year, for the most part, it's been on offense, which has put their defense in bad positions, allowing teams to score against them. Only giving up 198 points on the year puts them in fifth out of eight teams, which isn't great, but it's a lot better than 224, which is third from the bottom. DC Defenders were letting up the third most points in the league this year. So I have to imagine the Michigan Panthers offense will be able to put things together and will be able to have some success. But at the end of the day, it's just going to come out to who decides that they want it more. Who is the team that wants to come out with a win? I think Michigan deserves another championship. This state has been reveling in the success of all the teams that are involved in the state right now. So why not keep that rolling? Why not have that success continue? Right? And I think that the Michigan Panthers are riding all of the love that the fans are giving them. One thing Michigan sports fans love is success. They're playing inside of Ford Field, so you have that added love of the Detroit Lions doing so well. So now Michigan football fans are looking like, wow, we not only have two really good professional teams, we have a college football team that will be fighting for a national championship. We have Grand Valley State and Ferris State, who are always fighting for national championships at the D2 level. Michigan State hopefully going to make the rise again. So football fans really have absolutely nothing to complain about in the state of Michigan. They just got to be geared up for the weekend. It's going to be Saturday, June 14th. So later today, 8 p.m. on ABC, ESPN+. The Panthers will be the home team in the UFL championship against the DC Defenders. The Panthers are opening this game as 3-point favorites, and they're putting the over-under line at 50.5 points. I'm not going to say too much about who I think will win this game or why they will win it until I get into my picks coming up in the next segment. So we're going to bounce over to another playoff happening right now, and that would be the NBA Finals. The Oklahoma City Thunder are the 1 seed out of the West. The Indiana Pacers are the 4 seed out of the East. Currently, as I'm recording this, the Pacers hold a 2-1 series lead. Game 4 will have been the last night as you're listening to this, so I didn't get a chance to know the results of that game. But the Pacers are going to be looking to take a 3-1 lead, and obviously the Thunder are going to be looking to even that series up before they head back to OKC. I will not spoil who I think will win this game either, because I'm going to be picking game 5 in my picks, so I will let that conversation be had during the picks segment so you guys can know how that's all going to shake out in my mind. But this series has been absolutely electric from the start. When we take a look at game 1, a 1-point victory for the Pacers, 111 to 110. Thunder came back big, 123 to 107 in game 2 to even things up at 1. And then the Pacers retook the lead Wednesday night, 116-107 for their 2-1 series lead. I mean, there's a lot to be said here. The stars are showing up. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, the both of them. And then you look over at the Pacers, you got Obi Toppin doing his thing on the glass. And then obviously Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton are leading the entire charge. So it will be interesting to see how the series will play out. But, I mean, when you look at how the regular season series played out, the Thunder won both in convincing fashion. They beat the Pacers by 6 in game 1 back on December 26th, 120 to 114, and then they played again on March 29th, in which the Thunder won by 21, 132 to 111. But as everyone knows, playoff basketball, playoff football, playoff sports in general are entirely different than the regular season. People play with a little extra oomph, and you're seeing that. And it's amazing that Tyrese's dad was able to be in the arena for these games, and that all of that situation was able to be figured out. But you're seeing that the Pacers, that team, the fans, the city, the state is behind them. They're happy to be back in a place they haven't been in so long. They can't remember being this good since Reggie Miller was here. But, I mean, obviously you had that time where Danny Granger, Paul George, Roy Hibbert, and et cetera, George Hill, were in Indiana and were pushing, but guess who they couldn't get by? They couldn't get past LeBron, so they were never able to make it to an NBA Finals. They don't know what it feels like to be in the NBA Finals. Pacers fans haven't felt NBA Finals since early 2000, if not the 90s. So, of course, they're excited. Of course, this group feels like they can do it, and that's the added motivation for them. That is what's driving them to continue to have the success that we've seen them have against what was the best team in the NBA this year. They were 68-14 in the regular season. The Pacers were 50-32. So the Pacers are looking to do something that hasn't been done in so long, and the Thunder are looking to do something that has never been done. The Seattle Supersonics didn't win a championship. The Oklahoma City Thunder have zero championships, zero championship banners hanging inside of their arena. They have some retired numbers, but none of those guys run rings. They don't have any Larry O'Briens hanging standing in trophy cases inside of their arena. They're still searching their very first one. And SGA wants to be the guy to get him there. Chet Holmgren has been doing his part as well, hoping to be a second star that helps pushes them over the hump. The Jalen Williams, both of them, which are spelled differently but definitely have the same name, are going out there and doing the thing every single game. If this is peak NBA playoff basketball, where it's two teams battling for their spot and why they think that they should be raising the Larry O'Brien trophy. That's your catch up on the championships that are going down. We're going to get ready to get into the picks and wait until you hear the update from last week. We'll be back with the picks after the break on 95.3 WBCK. Oh.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for the picks. And the picks today, well, hopefully they're going to get me back, where I was not too long ago, because last week, I didn't have all that great of a week. I went 2-4 last week. My only wins were the Thunder in game 2 of the NBA Finals, and then Davishvili beating O'Malley last weekend during fight night. Everyone else severely let me down. But you, of course, can play along with the picks at any time. Listen to the games that I'm breaking down and the picks that I choose. You can either choose to pick alongside me or you can pick away, on the opposite side. Use the chat feature in the WBCK app and let us know what your picks were and how well you have been doing. I am currently sitting at 17-7, even after that bad week last week. So I don't even know why I'm really complaining. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing so well. I just want to have another really good week. Going under 500 is never, ever fun. That's how, that loss category catches up quickly. But now that we've been caught up from last week and how bad I did, definitely want to move on and do much better this week. We are going to start with the first matchup being that midweek series for the Detroit Tigers. They'll be taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates at Comerica Park. That will be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Tuesday is a 6:40 p.m. first pitch as they are putting Falter on the mound. The Detroit Tigers will put Casey Mize. Mize is 6-2 with a 2.95 ERA, and the Tigers are 23-9 at home. The Tuesday matchup is also a 6:40 p.m. first pitch. Haney is stepping on the mound, 3-4 with a 3.24 ERA for the Pirates, while Tariq Skubal, who is 6-2 with a 2.16 ERA, is going to be stepping on for those Tigers. And then Thursday has a 1:10 first pitch a little earlier in the day. Paul Skaines stepping on the mound for the Pirates. And then we got Montero stepping on the mound for the Tigers to wrap up this series. I think this one is pretty self-explanatory for me. There's no way I think the Tigers are losing at home, Comerica Park. They haven't even lost double-digit games there. The Pittsburgh Pirates are 28-41, so they've definitely had struggles this year. They're also 9-22 on the road, so it doesn't come easily for them when they're away from Pittsburgh. So I don't think that's going to get any easier in what might be the loudest ballpark in the entire MLB this year with the Detroit Tigers. So I'm going to go alongside the Tigers. I think that we're in a good position having Mize and Skubal in this rotation for this series, considering both of them have 6 wins and are leading the team. I think that they both have a chance to pick up another. The Tigers have a chance to go for a sweep, and maybe I'll throw in a little caveat and give myself an extra win if they grab a sweep here. But I do think the Tigers will come out on top regardless, as the Pirates will not have enough for them in their visit to Comerica Park. That's going to get us over into the WNBA. Not a ton of games worth looking at in terms of picking. There's obviously WNBA basketball is exciting to watch. Tons of amazing women playing basketball with unreal skills. But at the same time, we want to see good matchups. So we got to wait all the way until Thursday next week. We're at 7 p.m. on Prime Video. We're going to get the 7-4 Mercury taking on the undefeated New York Liberty. They are undefeated at this time, but to be honest, I don't see anyone taking the Liberty down before then either, as, I mean, the Liberty have just been unreal so far this year. They say that they're staying hungry amid their 9-0 start. Their next game is against the Fever later today at 3 p.m., but I don't see that being a concern. So I do think that the Liberty will still be undefeated by the time they roll around to play Phoenix. They also have Atlanta on Tuesday, but both Indiana and Atlanta have had serious problems this year. So I think we'll see an 11-0 Liberty squad getting ready to take on the Phoenix Mercury, who the Mercury have definitely had their troubles. Sabali has been fantastic for the Mercury, though. She's a big reason why they are 7-4. She wasn't able to come up big last week when they played the Storm, but she's going to look to do so against the Liberty, who are definitely the best team in the WNBA right now. ESPN doesn't quite agree with them. ESPN giving them an 84.5% chance to lose this game. They think the Phoenix Mercury only have a 15.5% chance, as this game will be going down at the Barclays Center on June 19th at 7 p.m. in Brooklyn, New York. The Mercury are still without Kalia Copper, Megan McConnell, and Kalani Brown, while the New York Liberty are looking to be without Jonquel Jones, as she's a game-time decision for now. And Leonie Fibik is also out until July 3rd. As obvious, the Liberty are 5-0 in their last 5 games. The Mercury are 3-2, so But their losses are good losses. I mean, Seattle and Minnesota are two of the better teams in the WNBA that are right atop the rankings. Matter of fact, Minnesota is 9-1 and is first in the Western Conference, while Seattle is 6-4 and is third, and they're just a half game behind Phoenix. So no bad losses, really, for Phoenix, but there's no losses for Liberty. So if you think I'm going against the New York Liberty for a loss against the Phoenix Mercury, you are crazy. That's going to get us into our next game. This one also on the hardwood. This will be game five of the NBA Finals against the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. This one will go down on Monday, June 16th, 8:30 p.m. on ABC, as always, at the Paycom Center in Oklahoma City. They're giving the Thunder a 59.2% chance as of now to win this game. They're going to be 40.8% for the Pacers, excuse me. We know the leaders. We know what's popping. The question is, who's going to come out on top? This has been three very hard-fought games up until this point. We don't expect Game 4 to be any different, and Game 5 is going to follow that same track. The big question is, what happens Saturday or Friday night for Game 5? You know, so if you think about it, if the Pacers go in and win Game 4 and they're up 3-1, you have to think the Thunder are going to win Game 5, because if they don't, the series is over, and then they're watching the Pacers celebrate on their home floor in their arena while their fans are spilling out angry for the NBA championship hanging, lifting the O'Brien. I don't really think that happens. But then you have to think about the flip side. If the Thunder win Game 4, are they able to win Game 5 as well, taking home that momentum and having their home crowd behind them? That puts them in a totally different scenario than the Pacers. The Pacers, if they go back to Oklahoma City tied 2-2, I think they feel a little more relaxed, because I think that, you know, they know that they're coming home for Game 6. At the worst, they could tie it up at 3-3 if they lose Game 5. But if they win Game 5, they're looking at closing it out at home in Game 6. So things get very interesting depending on who wins Game 4. But I think there's more pressure on the Thunder to win Game 4 than there is to win for the Pacers, which might make it for the Pacers to win and, you know, kind of put that pressure even harder on the Thunder and have their backs against the wall. So I'm going to take the Thunder to win Game 5, because I think the Pacers might be ending up winning Game 4. Now let's talk about that UFL championship. We talked. The Panthers are here. Both teams are 6-4 as they'll take on the DC Defenders. The Panthers are opening up as 3-point favorites. They have been better on the defensive end. They have been better on the offensive end. DC Defenders have just had a couple really good weeks at the end of the season, and then were able to take down the St. Louis Battlehawks, who were the UFL championship favorite last week. So do the Panthers have enough to take down a team that is on a headhunt to also be lifting their first UFL trophy? I think that's the cool thing about this UFL championship, is both of these teams have never won the championship before. So they're both looking to find a way to win their first UFL championship. But I'm going to lean on the side of the home team. I'm taking the Michigan Panthers. I think the Panthers are going to win and raise their first trophy, and I'm going to be ecstatic about it. That's going to get us over into our last couple of picks for the weekend. We're going back into the octagon. The UFC has a fight night going on later tonight. It's a 7 p.m. prelim, a 10 p.m. main card over on ESPN and ESPN Plus. We're going to start with the co-main event before we jump over to the main event. Women's flyweight, as Rose Yamanunis will be taking on Miranda Maverick. Yamanunis is 14-7, while Maverick is 17-5. Yamanunis, 5'5", 125 pounds, 32 years old, 65-inch on her reach, and she fights in an orthodox stance, while Maverick is 5'3", 126 pounds, 27 on her age, 65.5 on her reach, and she fights southpaw. When we take a look at the fighting odds, the money line favorite is Yamanunis at -255, while it's +205 for Maverick. So really not too far away. Neither one of them is expected to get a TKO or a submission, but it's a -170 for points for Yamanunis. They are expecting this to go over a round and a half, as that is at -6,000 on the betting favorites. It's expected to go to distance, actually, as that is a -550 favorite in the MMA game prop puts it at negative 1,300 for a no, but then there's also a plus 700 for the no. At the end of the day, this one's a little more simple for me because I've seen Nama Yunus in the ring. I've seen a Maverick in the ring. This is going to be a fantastic fight. This is going to come down to who wants it more, who is in their technique better, and who listens to their corner better. The thing about listening is Nama Yunus is a fantastic listener, and it's a reason why we've seen her at the top of the flyweight division in the UFC. I think she's trying to find her way back there, and I'm going to take her to win yet another fight, which is going to get us over into our last pick of the weekend. It's also in this fight night. This one is going to be the main event. It is a welterweight fight on the men's side for Kamaru Usman, who is 20-4, while Joaquin Buckley is 21-6. Buckley is coming in as the negative 280 favorite, while the plus 230 underdog is Usman. Usman's 6 foot, 184 pounds, 38 years old, 76 inches on the reach, and he's a switch fighter, while Buckley is 5'10", 171 pounds, 31 years in age, 76 on the reach as well, and has a southpaw stance. The fighting odds, obviously we heard the favorite was Buckley. Neither one of them expected to get a TKO or a submission. Neither one for points either. It is expected to go over 4.5 rounds, but not expected to go the distance. That is interesting. And the game prop has negative 225 on the no, plus 550 on the yes. Kamaru Usman has been trying to get back in the game, and we'll see if he can do so. I have him winning this one as well. That has me taking the Tigers, the Liberty, the Thunder, the Panthers, Usman, and Nama Yunus. I hope you guys have an amazing weekend, because I will as well. We'll be back next week with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.